This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
It's 6 o'clock and you are listening to KBOO. Next up is Bread and Roses. Tonight we have a conversation on the racial harassment of African American men in our Portland community. Stay tuned.
Do you love listening to KBOO? Want to get involved in the great programming you hear? Become a volunteer. KBOO's volunteer orientation will be Tuesday, August 6th at 6 p.m., located at Southeast 8th and Ankeny in Portland. Questions can be directed to Ani at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or by email at volunteer@kboo.org.
Listen to Armando Puentes every Sunday from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., playing the best in Tejano mixing with some traditional conjunto, as well as mariachi music and public affairs pertaining to the Latino community. That's Armando Puentes, only on KBOO Portland.
Marching at the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Delphine Crescenzo. Bread and Roses is a collective of women radio activists bringing you news and public affairs programming that's every Friday evening at 6 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. You can also find us on the web. That's kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can listen to past show, post show ideas, and comments. You can also like us on Facebook. Look for us as KBOO Bread and Roses. And if you would like to join our team of women hosts, producers, and engineers, please contact Ani Haynes at volunteer@kboo.org. Well, tonight I welcome several Portland activists in the studio to talk about the racial harassment of African American men in our community. The Trayvon Martin murder and the acquittal of his murderer have triggered a national conversation about racial profiling and also about the living legacy of racism in the U.S. Black men are incessantly stereotyped and harassed for who they are or for what they have come to represent in our society. Tonight, we'll hear firsthand accounts of racial harassments affecting Portland African American men, and we invite you to contribute by calling in and sharing how to shift this reality. In my philosophy, every issue is a women's issue, and the harassment and discrimination of African American men is a women's issue. We invite you to speak your truth tonight and to realize that though this conversation might be painful, we might have to accept non-closure at the end of this hour. Well, tonight, let me welcome Mustafa Coleman. He is a community activist, educator, entrepreneur, artist. For the past 7 years, Mustafa has worked in the education field across multiple school districts, including David Douglas and PPS. His long-term goal is to create an education system which focuses on equity and works towards giving each student what they need to succeed. As a young Black man working with middle school students, Mustafa feels passionate about breaking down social barriers and institutionalized racism. We also welcome Zoe Piliafas in the studio. Currently, Zoe is the manager for the Citizen Journalism and Digital Empowerment Program for World Pulse. Prior to this, to working with Grassroots Women's internationally, she managed a federally funded middle school program in Portland. The program's goal was to empower students that were deemed, quote, at risk of not graduating to increase their self-efficiency and attendance rates. Prior to her work in Portland, she worked in classroom in Durham, North Carolina. She taught in low-income schools and supported her students as they achieved unprecedented rates of proficiency on standardized tests. She believed that she is not an expert, but rather continually seeks to listen and learn with her student. We also welcome Mandela. Mandela is a local musician, a video producer, manager, booking agent, youth mentor, a teacher, and a CEO. He is an active performer and a prolific musician. Finally, we welcome Keisha Edwards. She is an educator and activist, a longtime PDX Portland, resident, and a diversity trainer, and also a mother, and she is here tonight with her son, Aaron. Welcome all of you to Brown Roses.
I was going to say thank you, Dolphy.
Yes, you can say thank you.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Well, I wanted to start the conversation tonight by asking all of you to share maybe a little bit about your personal story and how you came to community activism. Mustafa, would you go first?
All right. How I got into this is straight out of high school. So I got into education. I was doing a from school to work program. And I was given a chance in an alternative school that I graduated from, a chance that a lot of people that I know, a lot of my friends, a lot of my family didn't have. And I journeyed into this world of education, and ever since I've been going strong with it. At first, it was a job. It turned into a passion. And now I'm passionate about just being a role model that I didn't have in middle school, working with middle school students. Giving them that vision, giving them that that cultural identity to know that there are people of their color, their background, that can make it, even if they've had struggles, no matter what they've been through. So my real motivation in this work and this activism is just being that role model and breaking down the barriers that my students face daily and being a voice for them when they don't have a voice.
Thank you. Keisha, would you go next?
Sure. So tell me the question again.
How did you get into activism around around education and around equity?
So I've been doing the work for about 20 years, and I think that what moved me to get into the work is my own educational experiences as a young person. I am African American, and group was the first generation of young person to be bused. So I went to predominantly white schools, and it was a very, very challenging experience. The students, I didn't fit in. The students didn't know what to do with me. There was the teachers didn't know what to do with me. The curriculum didn't reflect me. And after probably a few years of that, what I realized or understood was that school really wasn't for me, and that was really painful. And I think that young people, education is about and for everybody, and every young person should feel deeply engaged, and that education is about them and for them. So I think my experiences as a young person really moved and motivated me to do the work that I do in the field of education and social service.
Thank you. Zoe, would you go next?
Thank you. I'm a white woman, and I started working in Durham, North Carolina as a teacher, I want to say 2005, maybe it's 2006, I don't know. And I started to teach history, and the book that I was given to teach history had spotlights. And the spotlight was, here's what a woman did. Here's what an African American did. I looked around my classroom, and I thought, really, what's going on here? Is this history? And I started to teach history differently. And as I was teaching it, I think I learned more from my students in the 7 years than I've ever learned as a person. Mm-hmm. So I've continued on that path.
Mm-hmm. Mandela?
I guess when I think about myself as an activist, it probably started from my mom. The first, like when we were learning how to read, the books that we were reading were like short books, but they were like a Martin Luther King autobiography, Malcolm X, and like those are the books that we learn from. So like, yeah, Dr. Seuss and all that came after, but like my mom, like she named me Mandela, so she was always like radical and just different
after Nelson Mandela.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's on my birth certificate. So my mom just, and then aside from that, just like continuing to learn and growing and having experiences and I guess right and wrong are kind of like ideas. So I guess just like trusting myself to do what's right, and then these things are right to me. So,
mm-hmm. Aaron, do you consider yourself an activist? Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do?
I mean, my story would coincide with what he just said. Mm-hmm. My mom was big on that as well, and then just my elders and people that I looked up to, mostly people of color.
Mm-hmm. And so all of you have some kind of connection or have made some connection to education. Aaron, maybe would you go first? Can you talk about what the role that education has had in your life, and why do you feel it's so important?
I mean, it's just like live and learn. Mm-hmm. So education is going to come with experience. And it plays a big role in the future. It's actually the key to the future, I think.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like your mother, when she said that she felt like school was not for her, or did you always felt that you were comfortable in school?
I would kind of agree too. School was kind of like, I felt like, I wouldn't say pointless, but I didn't get as much as expected, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the idea really is that the way the school system is structured does not always speak to our young African-American men. Mandela, you are a mentor as well. Would you talk a little bit about like how you talk with the young people you work with around education? What do you try to stress for them?
Well, I definitely tell them that it's important and that they should go as far with it as they can. Just thinking about like the people that I talk to. A lot of them are like musicians, or they play basketball, or like they all have something that they do, and it's always better with school. I tell them that like if you're gonna make music, you should go to school for it. If you're gonna play basketball, you should go to school. And so I don't know. I guess I just stress that it's important, and like they always have like some reason that it's not important to them. Like, mm-hmm. oh, it's not the math, or I don't know when I'm ever gonna use this in my life, and especially for, like, people that are musicians, a lot of them are rappers, I tell them, like, it's just vocabulary. It's just things that you want to learn. Like, you want to stay up on history and things that are happening and current things. So I just guess I stress the importance of it.
Mm-hmm. Mustafa, what do you think that some young people, you know, black, brown, don't connect with what is being taught in the school system?
Like I said in my bio, I don't feel like the school system is equitable. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like they're trying to really meet the needs of these students, or even try and meet these students where they're at. They're coming down from an authoritative figure and saying, this is what's important to me, so this must be what's important to you. And mm-hmm. not taking into account different people's backgrounds, brown people's backgrounds, and they may have stepped in the right direction when they try to get rid of standardized testing, because there are things on the test that, you know, some brown people had never even heard of. Mm-hmm. The things just weren't relevant in their lives. And I feel like a lot of the schooling right now, they're having trouble with behavior and management and all these things. It's because the kids don't relate to the material, and it's not relevant to them. They don't find, while they're struggling and they need these things in their lives fulfilled, they need resources, they need things in their lives to be worked out. They can't focus on schoolwork and things that are relevant to them, and just a bunch of facts and memorizing things and not giving the tools of how to survive in the world around them.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do in the work that you do as an educator to you know, trying to maybe change some of the ways that some of that content is being presented to young people?
The program I work for,
yeah,
is an after-school program, mm-hmm. and we focus on their interest, and we take their interest and their goals, and we work with them and show them real-life pathways, and not just about talk and about memorization, but about going out there experiential learning and putting your hands on it and talking to those professionals and seeing those people who are doing the things in your community and behind the scenes, and giving them that point of view that they really don't get, that the school system's not really trying to show them. Mm-hmm. Just shove a bunch of facts down their throat, but not really telling them how to survive with those facts or even how to use those things. It's just a bunch of knowledge without applying it to the world.
Mm-hmm. And Keisha, you are a diversity coach. Would you share a little bit about some of the work that you do around this and around maybe helping teachers understand how to be a little bit more culturally relevant so that young Black men also feel that the school is for them?
Sure. So the work that I do teacher professional development, and my content area is around culturally responsive teaching. And really that is about helping teachers connect with their students better, develop deeper relationships, move beyond the stereotypes. It really is about, I think, it's not about reading a book or it's not about a particular curriculum. Mm-hmm. It really is about getting educators in tune with themselves and really uncovering the biases and assumptions that they hold. We all hold biases and assumptions. We've all been trained well by dominant culture to believe things about people that don't look like us. I think that Black boys and Black men in particular have a really challenging time because of the stereotypes that are out there in dominant culture about them. I think Black boys and Black men are feared. I see that a lot in the public school system when I do work with teachers. Most of my work, because Oregon's predominantly white, the teaching force is predominantly white, most of my work is with white people trying to, you know, have courageous conversations about race and class and culture. I also want to say that as a mother, I have two Black boys, and I have a daughter, Black daughter. By the time my kids were in elementary school, I had gone back to college. I was degreed. I was in the field of education. And it was still very challenging for me to get my kids through dominant culture school. Mm-hmm. I think that the school system is very biased. It's cultured a particular way. It supports the growth and development of white students. You know, I think it was very painful to have as much education as I did and to know as much as I did and still not be able to help my children negotiate as I should have been able to help them negotiate. Mm-hmm. And so that just tells me that there's something wrong with the structure, very mm-hmm. challenging about the structure. And I know that I'm not alone. I would say that a lot of Black parents, no matter what their educational background, they could be highly educated and they still have challenges with the structure of the system and getting their kids through school.
Mm-hmm. Zoe, you mentioned that you are white and that you've been an educator for years. Do you feel that you were prepared in working with students of color in your classroom?
No, I don't think that there's proper teacher training at all. And I don't think that the curriculum that exists in school is right for kids. I don't think it tells the real story. I think we've all sat in either it be a training or we've listened to a speaker and it hasn't resonated with us. Mm-hmm. And imagine if that was your walk in school. If you sat there every day and it wasn't about you, that this, what was being taught or how it was being taught, the why, even the reasons why we were there. So my experience walking in school, I came from, you know, a privileged place. And in that privilege, I heard from other educators their perceptions of the kids. And I would sit back and go, but you're about to teach them. I don't understand. So, yeah, absolutely. I was really privy to too much. And stepping back, I wish I could have done more.
We're going to take a short musical break. You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo, and I have Keisha and Aaron and Mustafa and Zoe Ann Mandel in the studio with me. And tonight we are trying to have a conversation around the racial harassment of African-American men in our community. And when we come back from this break, we'll talk more about, you know, firsthand account and what this all translates into. So we'll be back in a minute.
It's just me against the world. will they last or be blasted? Hard headed bastard. Maybe you're listening in this casket. The aftermath, more bodies being buried. I'm losing my homies in a hurry. They're relocating to the cemetery. Got me worried, stressing my business blurry. The question is, will I live? No one in the world loves me. I'm headed for danger. Don't trust strangers, put one in the chamber whenever I'm feeling this anger. Don't wanna make excuses, cause this is how it is. What's the use unless we're shooting? No one notices the youth. It's just me against the world, baby.
You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. And tonight, I have quite a few Portland activists with me in the studio. It's such an honor, and we're having this conversation around the racial harassment of African-American men in our community. And this conversation has been triggered by you know, a few instances that have happened. And what I wanted to do right now is play a piece that I recorded in Portland. It was a couple of weeks ago. And so, you know, after the jury reached that verdict of in the George Zimmerman case and decided to let him go, despite the fact that he murdered an unarmed 17-year-old boy, there were many protests and marching and, you know, gatherings around the nation. And so here in Portland, there were a couple hundred people who gathered on Sunday, July 14th, for what they call a Justice for Trayvon rally. That was in Peninsula Park in North Portland. And so I was at the rally, like a few of you guys were there as well. I recorded some of the remarks. And so here is one of the excerpts, and I entitled it, "It Gets Tiresome."
I just wanted to say, when they called me this morning to come out here, I thought, I'm so tired of standing, marching, walking, fighting. It freaking gets tiresome. Like, look at you. Would you want to continue to do this every time? Somebody that looks like you. Like, would you, other people that don't have brown and black skin, would you want to do this every time something happens in your community? On my way up here, I rode my bike. I passed 11,000 people in Portland on a bike ride. But we look around and there's less than 200 people here. There's a problem in this state. Park to talk about an issue instead of thinking, and we'll come out here today, but what will you do tomorrow? When we leave here and go back to our jobs, will you talk to somebody? What will you do? It feels good right now, but this ain't a feeling for some of us. This is our life. For driving too close to the side of the road on 82nd. Racism is alive and well in this state, yes. And what will we do?
You're listening to Bread and Roses. So this was an excerpt recorded on location for the Justice for Trayvon Martin rally in North Portland on July 14th. If you want to listen to the full hour of community comments that I recorded on that day, you can go to kboo.fm/breadandroses. Mustafa, could you react to what this community member had to say at that rally?
What I have to say about that is, since I've been in the education system, I've had the opportunity to go to different trainings and things like that. And recently they've been doing a lot of cultural competency trainings in the district. Mm-hmm. And I've gone to one, and I felt kind of jaded going to it because I've been to different schools or the other schools that I've worked in. And every time it was a cultural competency training, it was really the ask the black man how to deal with the black kids, pretty much, or the brown kids. And like strategies and tips that we could use for these unruly children that we can't deal with. So I was going to this training with the district, and I went in there jaded, and I was thinking that same thing of like, am I going to have to be a black man speaking for my race once again? And am I going to have to be here telling people my story once again, and I'm going to have to stand up for my people once again. Mm-hmm. And just being on this radio show has made me realize that, yes, I'm going to have to do it every single time. Every single time I'm going to have to stand up. Every single time I'm going to have to say something.
And no matter how tiresome.
No matter how tiresome. But, yeah, man, I'm tired of being tired.
Keisha, did you want to add?
I do. I really feel and appreciate the notion of being tired because I've been doing the work for 20 years. And I actually am in, I put it in quotations, but in retirement from the work because it has been so exhausting. And so I'm really appreciative that I have three young men, young black men in the room that are passionate about it and willing to take it up. I think that, so I have to experience racism every day of my life, and that's exhausting. And then I go and do the work to fight racism, and that's quadruply exhausting. And I think that it is really important for white people to take up the work, because people of color, we didn't create racism. We shouldn't be the ones that have the primary responsibility to try to get rid of it. And so I want to tell all the white people out there that are listening that it really is your job to take up the work. And I love the question, what will you do tomorrow? And the question really is, what will you do today? What will you do? What will each individual person do to really take responsibility for making the world and for making racism be different?
Mm-hmm. Mandela?
My response to that is that it's kind of weird. I guess I look forward to the being tired because I feel like as young as I am, I'm not tired.
Good.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, I look at it and I look at all the stuff I want to do with my music and all the things that I want to do in general with kids and stuff like that. And it's like, I look at, like, someone like her. She's like a mentor to me. And I'm like, I feel that you're tired, but I'm not. So I'm like, I see how you could be, though. And I don't know, I kind of admire it, I guess. So I look forward to being tired.
If you'd like the audience to call and maybe share your stories as well with us, we would love, you know, to hear, you know, about your stories and maybe ways that you cope or interrupt racism in your life. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And please, no cursing. And we invite you to add to the conversation and to speak your truth. Mustafa, one of the way that we came to have this show tonight is because a few weeks ago you had an incident. Would you share that incident that happened to you? I think that it's, you know, important whenever we, you know, we talk about really hard, traumatizing moments such as, you know, the killing of Trayvon Martin. But I think it's also very important to acknowledge, you know, Keisha, you said you experience racism every day. Sometimes it's really small and subtle. And I think that your experience was one of these, you know, really small incident that just, you know, put more weight and gets to the tiresome feeling at one point.
I live in Southeast Portland, and that's off of, off of 82nd. I'm not going to tell y'all where I live, but I was headed from Fred Meyer's, and I was hit by a car. And while I was getting the information, and I was exchanging information with the man, another man rolls up, and this white guy with a bald head and a big white Escalade. And he asks the guy who hit me, he says, "Did you just hit that guy?" And the guy goes, "Yeah." And the guy in the white Escalade says, "You know what? I just saw that nigger up the street, and he did that same thing. This nigger does this all over town, and I saw it before. He gets over, and he's trying to make money off of people by getting hit." And I was taken aback because it's been a while since it's just been that blatant, just right in my face, just, you know. And I was taken aback too, because my students are in that area, and I live around my school that I work in, and I'm just like, man, you know, anyway, so he says this, and I'm taken aback. I take off my glass. I'm like, no, you're not talking about me. There's no way you could talk. You're not talking about me. You know, and in my back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, I'm a young black man. I have dreads. So obviously he's just thinking of some guy he saw with dreads, some black dude he saw, mm-hmm. you know, mistaking me for him. I'm like, no, you're not seeing me because I'm never even down here like this. I've never gotten hit by a car, first mm-hmm. of all, you know. He's like, yeah, you niggas are shiesty. Mm-hmm. They do this all the time. They do things like this. They try to get over. And he took a right and sped off.
So on top of, like, you potentially being hurt and having just, like, experienced, you know, this, like, shocking moment of, you know, ended up on the floor, then also your pride is, you know, also hurt through that experience.
Yes.
We have someone on the phone. Marie.
Yes. From what you, the gentleman just related about being hit and then the cruelty of that white person, I just want to apologize deeply from my heart. That is so cruel to think that you had been hurt and injured. I'm just so terribly sorry. And I wanted to just say my teeny little personal story. It's just a teeny story. But this spring I had to have a lot of Greyhound bus trips. I was going to Seattle for a little minor surgery several times and to go back for the stitches to get out. And believe me, from listening to cable radio, I treated all the black people on the bus much more. I've never been prejudiced, but I was careful to give each one of them a feeling of dignity. And I'm so grateful for what I learned from KABU. I was raised as a child knowing that the black people suffered, but from KABU I've learned, and from Pacifica Radio, oh my gosh, it's still so terrible. So thank you all very much for this program today.
Thank you, Mary. We also have Maggie on the phone.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me. Well, no thank you for having this conversation. I'm a graduate student at Portland State University, and I'm starting to become a school counselor. And mm-hmm. I just have a question. I've been deeply working on issues of resiliency, specifically with positive ethnic identity. So as a future school counselor, I'm just wondering, like, what kind of things do your guests have to say about what they have seen helps kids be resilient? And then, you know, that could obviously spread out to adults as well.
Thank you, Maggie, for your
question. And I can take my question off the air.
Okay, thank you. Keisha, would you address this question as an equity coach?
Sure. I think that it starts with you as the counselor, and I think that you have to develop strong relationships with your students. I think that you have to, again, that starts with yourself, and you have to do a lot of exploration around your biases and assumptions, and you have to suspend judgment with every student that you encounter. I think that you have to really ask lots of really great questions. You don't have to know all the answers, but you have to be able to ask great questions and ask them in a way that is kind and sensitive and loving. And so you ask your students questions, you ask your families questions, you ask yourself really hard questions. I don't know if I like the word resiliency. I think resiliency is important, but I think that it's about, I don't know, treating all kids like human beings that have a right to learn and a right to achieve to their fullest potential. I also think it's about a lot of undoing in yourself and in the system, because you're going to come across a lot of tweaks in the system that don't seem right, and you're going to have to advocate for students.
Mm-hmm. Zoe, as a teacher, what did you feel was some of the steps that you've taken?
If you don't mind, I wanted to talk on the idea of system, and because I feel like if we don't step back, because it's not just about education, and when I go to a day that I had before I ended up leaving the program that Mustafa and I worked in together, my day started, I went to Cesar Chavez and did a home visit with one of my staff, and in the home visit, we couldn't find Jose. Jose hadn't been to school for a week. And as we're sitting with mom, we realize she didn't know this and that their lights were turned off. And Jose, I think, was trying to make money in some way. And she didn't have the resources, because she wasn't deemed legal, to know where to go. And then my next step was to go to Harrison Park. And our kids were going to be highlighted with PCC for artwork. So I go to Harrison Park, and I'm there, and the kids are excited. We're about to get on the bus, and I get a phone call. And it's Lane Middle School, where Mustafa had worked. And the bus has been vandalized. So I'm like, okay. And I say to the site supervisor, good luck. I'll see you in a bit. And as I'm driving down, I want to say it's 97th, I saw two cop cars and two young African-American men with guns to their heads. I looked, and I recognized one of the kids. And he looked me in the eye. And I didn't know what to do. I knew that I could look at him, but I had to go. And I drove away, and I pull up to Lane. And I go to Lane, and they're in after school now. And I'm starving. I haven't ate yet. And I walk, and I get myself a hot dog. And the hot dog was purple. And I look around, and I'm eating the hot dog. And I look at all the kids. And one of the site instructors go, you're going to eat that? And I said, we're feeding the children this. And I walked out. And the cops said, we're too busy to come look at that bus. So I guess what I'm trying to paint is a picture of a system that's broken. It's about so many things.
We have another caller, I think.
Hi.
Hi. What's your name?
I did not like that word resilience either.
Okay.
Because what I got from the word resilience is someone kicks you in the face and you're supposed to smile and bounce back. If you can't smile and bounce back, it's because you're not resilient. And I think that I really want to hear more about what white people can do to confront each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired of crap happening to me, and there being a bunch of white people surrounding me that witness it, and no one says anything. Or someone might shyly smile at me like, I'm with you, sister. No, you're not. Because if you were, you'd have spoken up. Shy, quiet smiling doesn't do crap for me.
Thank you for sharing that. What was your name?
Have a good day.
Thank you. Mandela, I'm wondering if you could maybe address something like that. Why was there a time when you felt that you connected with some of your teachers, maybe in school, of with some white people, and what they were doing was actually right? Because I think that the point that the caller just made is a very important point. You know, this is not about, you know, showing, you know, just sympathy. I think the very first caller that we had was, you know, saying, I'm sorry, but the truth is that, you know, sorry doesn't do much, you know, for people. And Zoe addressed, you know, that there's, you know, so many things that need to be changed. But did you ever connect with someone, a white person, that you felt, I think that they get it?
Yeah. A lot of my teachers.
What do they get right?
Let me think. I don't know. I think maybe they were resilient because of how I was. I went to Jefferson High School first, and that's in Northeast Portland. And then I didn't graduate from there because I was just kicking it. Like, I would, they had at lunch, I just wouldn't come back. And so I think the school that I graduated from, there was no off-campus lunch. So then I was like, there's no leaving for lunch and not coming back. But I guess the teachers, and even at Jeff, there were certain teachers that were just, I don't know, the way I was acting wasn't always, sometimes I would try to get in trouble and I wouldn't even end up in trouble. So I guess they could just, I don't know, they could just deal with me. Mm-hmm. Or I graduated from a school, an alternative school called Open Meadow. And I don't know, the teachers there were just, they could just deal with me. I guess I was just a handful. And even sometimes I'll come in like late for class and they look at me like, well, you're late. And I'm just like sneaking in and sitting down. They know, but it's, I don't know. They could just handle me. They could just deal with me. Mm-hmm. Or certain things that like I would do, I'd be mad in class one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe the classes were so small that they really felt like they knew me. And then I think with them feeling like they knew me, I could allow them to know me. 'Cause
yeah, and like for them, what I hear from you is like they did not, you know, put a blame on you based on the fact that, you know, you are a black man.
Right.
Therefore, that was kind of their expectation. So they had really high expectations for you, no matter, you know, the color of your skin.
Right.
And again, as you say, they'll learn to know you. Mustafa, I really wanted to acknowledge, you know, the story that you told us, and, you know, the heaviness of it. What I'm wondering is what did, you know, the driver, the person who hit you do? Because that was his opportunity to interrupt that racism. So I'm just curious if he took that opportunity or not.
So I know he did not take the opportunity.
Okay.
He pretended like he didn't hear it, pretty much.
Wow.
He just said nothing about it. And what really messed with my mind was I know he heard it. So I did make my claim and everything, and I did what I was supposed to do.
Okay.
I just wonder if he was telling the insurance company, like, well, he might, you know, mm-hmm. he might be trying to fraud you guys and, you know, sowing doubt in with things, you know. And I'm not even trying to go after the guy, because the guy stayed. We exchanged information and things, but it's just the things I have to think about daily.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think like, okay, is my claim not going to be taken seriously? Because now these, you know, and the guy was all even saying like, I'll be your witness. I'll be your witness
to the other.
Yeah.
Guy
to what it, to what he said,
mm-hmm.
you know, just so no, he did not take the opportunity to stand up and speak out.
Mm-hmm. Can I say something?
Yes. Okay. I think the two things I would say to white people to acknowledge, I think we grow in vulnerability and fear. And the places that I feel vulnerable are when I have to acknowledge that I don't know something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably been in every instance. But then I realized that the only way that if I acknowledge this, then I learn.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say first, acknowledge your vulnerability and be open to listening to things that you don't know. And then that fear, I think to confront the fear when it happens or to seek support from people that know what to do, because it is scary to stand up. But I think it's even scarier what happens when you don't.
Keisha, I see you taking notes. Did you want to add anything before we take a musical break? And Aaron, just jump in at any time, okay?
Okay.
So I love the question, what can white people do? And I was fast and furious jotting a few notes. So I think that what white people can do is first be willing to be courageous, because I do think that it takes courage to even look at racism, to address racism. I think that it's important to learn about racism, particularly in Oregon, because Oregon has a tremendous and fabulous racist history that has gotten us where we are today in terms of race relations with white people and people of color in Oregon. Oregon was, I think, one of only two states that actually wrote exclusion of black people into the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
which has had a long impact. That's It's a scary place to be for people of color and black people in particular. I think that it's really important for white people to talk about race and racism with each other. I think it's important to talk about it with people of color, but there's a lot of stuff that you all need to talk about with yourselves. And so you can find some friends and talk about race. I think that it's important to try to get to know people outside of your normal friendship circle, because I know that we hang out with people mostly that look like us, and white people are hanging out with white people, black people are hanging out with black people, Latino people are hanging out with Latino people. So white people, find some friends outside of your normal social circles.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you have to be real and do it in a way that's respectful. You don't want to be like, hey, you want to be my new black friend.
Yes.
Yeah. So be wary of tokenism. Mm-hmm. A couple more things. I think that you have to train yourself to see racism, because if you haven't had to live that, lots of times there's stuff going on all around you that you don't see. So you have to make the invisible visible around racism. I think that you have to believe people of color when they share their experiences around race. I think lots of white people don't want to believe people of color. Oh, it's not that bad, or oh, racism doesn't exist anymore.
Or you did something to cause that.
Right.
Or because you're black. Oh, it's because you're black.
Yes.
Don't let that discourage you. Yes, it's because I'm black.
Yeah, there you go. Right on. And then I think that it's really important to start interrupting racism when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes, again, a lot of courage, and it takes tenacity. I think that you will know who your true friends are when you begin to interrupt racism and the people around you begin to make you feel like you're crazy. And so I would say just keep coming back at it. I think have conversations, deep conversations, courageous conversations.
Thank you. And when we come back, we're going to take a short musical break and we'll talk about concrete ways that you can interrupt racism. I just want to, before we do, echo something that Zoe had said about, you know, learning. I also think that it's very important to acknowledge that you can never be a black person as a white person. You can never be a black man. And therefore, it's also very important that you believe the experiences and not try to say, oh, I know how he feels. Because it's not possible. You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. We're going to take a short musical break, and then we'll come back to this conversation. So stay tuned.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I find it hard to say that everything is all right. Look at me that way, like everything is alright. 'Cause my own eyes can see through all your false pretenses, but what you fail to see. Cheap and easy to be wasted as history repeats. So foul you can taste it. And while the people sleep,
you're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo, and I'm here with a handful of community activists here from Portland. We have Keisha Edwards and her son Aaron Edwards. We have Mandela, Zoe Piliafis, and Mustafa Coleman. So before the break, we talked about interrupting racism, and I think that that's something that can be difficult. Mustafa, I wanted to go back to you, and you shared before the break about one, very painful experience, that you had just a few weeks ago in the streets. I'm wondering how does one live after such an experience, an insulting experience, pretty much?
Man, I keep on as I've always, and I call upon the strength of my elders and the people who have been through much tougher things.
Mm-hmm.
And like you were saying, you're talking about that Trayvon march. I'm ashamed to say that was my first march. My first time being out there with the people rising up. And I feel like, as a people, we don't do those things anymore. And this is just the tip of the iceberg for me, And I have to thank you. I have to thank Zoe, because I was going to just be jaded about this and be like, this is what happens, and mm-hmm. just suck it up just one more time. Man, let him, tell my family about it. Tell my friends about it. She was like, nah, you got to do this. And it's about having the people around who are like, nah, it's time to speak out. It's time to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to really stop closing our eyes, stop letting these things pass by. And I forgot what the question was.
Well, I think that sometimes, you know, I mean, whenever you are victim over and over and over again, then you get to a really angry point. And then, you know, you end up, you know, maybe doing things which are not as productive as, even though you have the right to be angry and, you know, even more than angry. I think that, you know, I want to honor you speaking up. And I don't think that you should be ashamed that this was your first march, because I know it won't be the last.
Yeah, definitely. And I just, you know, it's thinking like you're, I don't know how to say this, you know, but it's like if you hate a certain people and you treat them like that, you're creating those people.
Mm-hmm.
By doing the things that you're doing, you're creating the very people that you hate. By saying the things that you're saying, by acting the way you, by going about your day the way you do, you're creating those people and you're just creating more hate. And so now if I was just, what, one of my middle school students who didn't know any better, and now you just created a black boy who hates white people now, mm-hmm. who's just going to do things just because he can. Mm-hmm. And going to be like, you know what, I don't care about this. I don't mm-hmm. care, you know, I don't care about that. You know, just furthering the relations.
Furthering the relations, but then at the same time, you know, the white people and their privilege are not going to be hurt by what he does. It's only going to hurt him and his life.
It's only going to come back to bite him.
Yeah.
Because if I was a student or something, then he catch me on the flip side mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm somewhere else and he gets jumped or, you know, just mm-hmm. just something like that. Just,
mm-hmm.
you know,
just Zoe.
No, go ahead.
No, she's an interrupter. this is her culture.
Hey, I just wanted to comment and maybe a little pushback on, I feel like white people are being hurt by this. There are, okay. when I think about the students that I've taught, brilliance, and we are missing out on the cure to so many cancers right now. Mm. We're missing out on so much if we can't get this right. So I think we're all getting hurt by this.
Thank you for the pushback. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Keisha, you mentioned, you know, experiences racism on an everyday basis. How do you cope with it?
I drink.
No. What are we doing after this, Keisha?
It helps a bit.
I'm only partially
kidding.
It takes
the sting off.
I have right.
Every
what?
Educator I know.
Can I good one. What about, okay, what about this? What Aaron. About invisible racism?
Oh.
What about the people, you know what they're saying inside their head, but they just don't say it out loud? That happens to me every day. And like, with what you're talking about, like I can walk by somebody and feel their vibe, and I might be having a good day and I might say, hey, how are you doing? And a certain lady might look at me and be like, dude, you don't even exist. You're not even human. And I feel that every day. It's not something that I'm used to, but it's something that you got to cope with.
Mm-hmm. How do you cope?
Half the time I sweep it under the rug and give people a pass. Like with your situation, if that dude would have called me out of my name like that, you know, that
probably your reaction would have been different.
That would have been,
well, I was still dazed and confused from getting hit by a car.
But that's what I'm saying. Look, he just got victimized twice.
Yeah,
he got
absolutely.
Hit by the car by mm-hmm. one dude, and then the other dude disrespected him and violated him again on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So he got, that was crazy.
That was absolutely a crazy incident. But unfortunately, as you say, there is that, you know, outright, I'm calling you names.
Yeah.
And then there is this, you know, you are invisible for me. Why do you even, you know, want to say hi or want to contribute to the society? Because you're not valued.
I do want to talk about coping, like, on a serious level, because I do think that racism leads to depression. It mm-hmm. leads to feeling worthless or invisible. And I know that I have not taken really good care of myself in the work. Like, I've been doing the work for 20 years and didn't think that it had an emotional impact on me. I think that that as black people or as people of color who experience racism, you are taught to buck up and just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Have a stiff upper lip, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, keep going. And I think after 20 years of doing that, then I realized the toll that it has taken on my physical being. And then in retrospect, I can reflect back and think about incidences that I got really sick for extended periods of time, or you know, so it does take a toll. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to do now is be more mindful of the emotional impact that racism has on me as a human being, but then also the emotional impact that doing the work of fighting racism has. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've really taken a break for the last year and have not done the work because it's been so devastating to my psyche. And it's taken a year of not doing the work and deep reflection and trying to take better care of myself, eat better, get out in the woods, yeah, or go away from the urban area, be by myself, be in nature. So I just want to say that for you youngins, please pay attention, that it really does have a deep impact, and that take good care of yourselves so that you can not burn out, or that you can pass the torch before you burn out, that mm-hmm. you just don't disappear and go away, or you don't, you know, something bad doesn't happen to you physically, like cancer, because I think that racism causes cancer. I think that fighting racism can cause cancer. Yeah.
Thank you for that. And also, Aaron, I wanted to acknowledge the fact that, you know, you have a radio show. I think that mm-hmm. could be one way to cope.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not assuming that just talking about the issues, but at least, you know, using, you know, your energy to create something positive. Mm-hmm. Mandela, I know you are also a performing artist. Would you talk about how that is also maybe a way for you to cope? I'm just assuming,
tell me. It definitely is. Just being able to write it and then say it wherever I want. And then it's music. So, like, in a conversation, it's a little more awkward to just bring it up and start talking about it. But I don't know. I guess just, and sometimes I might write something so deep and crazy that I don't even record it, and it's just for me. Right. It's just for me to just ball up and, you know. But coping with it, I guess just my ambition, probably, because it happens so often. Like, I don't know how often that happens to you. But it happens pretty often. I experience people like, and I maybe it's me experiencing it because I'm out and doing so much. Mm-hmm. But I guess sometimes it is like overwhelming. Now that I think about it, like somebody will say something to me and then I'll try and help them out. Like they'll be saying the N-word, like just in conversation with me. And I'll call them out and I'm like, you're not going to be saying that while we're sitting here kicking it. Mm-hmm. And then it'll, like, they'll have a discussion for me about why they can say it or how come I can say it.
And that's the white person?
Exactly. Oh, goodness. And so then after a while, I might get so frustrated that I'm like, okay, say what you want. And I'm just done with it. Mm-hmm. So I guess, because like you said, like you will resort to violence sometimes when people walk up to you and say things like that to you. Like, you get so angry that you just, so I'm not really sure how to cope with it. I guess my music is a big help. And it's just like talking to people is a big help too. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, we get mad. And
being a musician, you kind of have the voice. You kind of got the green light. Mm-hmm. Music is healing.
It is.
And it's self-expression. So like whatever you go through or whatever we go through, we put it into our writing.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it is almost 7:00. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, all of you, for coming here tonight. Keisha Edwards, Aaron Edwards, Mandela, Zoe Pelayafis, and Mustafa Coleman. Thank you, all of you, the audience, for tuning in to Bread and Roses this evening. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. Bread and Roses is a collective of women. We are radio activists. We are bringing you news and public affairs programming every Friday at 6. You can find us on the web, kboo.fm/breadandroses. If you missed part of the show, you can go, maybe an hour from now and find it. It's podcasted on there. Share also your show ideas if you'd like me to cover anything. I'm always down. Like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses, and join us. Please contact Ani Haynes if you want to help us here. We are hosts, producers, engineers. Thank you, Chris, for engineering. Thank you. Hey. Thanks to all of you again for joining us tonight. Next week, the amazing Della Ray will be your host. Have a wonderful week, everyone.
Hey. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
KBOO Portland. It is 7 o'clock right now. We are getting out of Red and Roses and we are heading into our Hard Knock Hour. So definitely stay tuned. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What's up, fam? You're tuned to Hard Knock Radio. And on today's program, we'll speak with the director, writer, and producer of the new film, Mumia, Long Distance Revolutionary, Stephen Vitoria. And then also, later on in the program, we'll hear from author of the new Jim Crow, Michelle Alexander. I'm Anita Johnson. All this and more ahead. Do not touch that dial. This is Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
The first annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center,